brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey Hoopheads, this April our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are offering a huge $3,000 discount with a trade-in of any model in any condition. And they'll knock off $3,000 when you trade in one of their competitors' machines too. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT Plus models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Coach Dan DeCrane from Gilmore Academy, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Linsing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are talking some NBA playoffs. We just watched Trae Young put the Celtics on ice. What's that?
Little ice baby.
All right. Nice.
But I don't want to go too far. I cut it off. Copyright infringement. And I don't want Queen to come after us like they came after Vanilla Ice. So we'll just
leave
it at that.
Hopefully not. Huge performance by Trae Young and the Hawks. Kudos to them.
Yeah, for sure.
Great game.
Yeah, great game. So we're going to talk about that. Before we do that, we're going to do what we started with last week, Mike. I picked a random stat. All-time NBA, and I took the NBA-ABA list again because I figured, like, we got to keep it consistent. So all-time NBA-ABA career playoff leaders in assists. So I've got the top 12 pulled up here.
All right.
And there's a few people on this top 12 I would have not anticipated being on the top 12. I'll just leave it at that.
All right. So let's go with some of the obvious candidates, which, again, I have no idea if they're right or not, but okay. Magic.
He's number one.
John Stockton.
He's number three.
All right. So I've got one and three. Those are the two guys that Jason Kidd.
He's four.
All right, so I got three out of the top five so far. Let's see. Number two. Man. Michael Jordan.
He's number 12.
Number 12, okay. Let's see. Somebody else who played a lot of basketball. And, man, all right. Okay, Tony Parker.
He's six.
Okay.
I'm sitting here shaking my head, Mike.
You're shaking my... LeBron James.
Number two.
All right, so all I have is number five to get, correct?
Yep.
So I've got five out of the top six.
Mm-hmm.
Isaiah Thomas.
Nah, not unless he's actually 14.
Wow, okay. Larry Bird.
He is number 8.
Man, who am I missing that's played, that's won a lot of titles?
He's still currently, he's actually playing tonight, Mike.
Chris Paul.
Number 5. There you go. All right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I didn't do too bad then.
No. Okay. So
that was pretty
good. None of those top 5 surprised me. Tony Parker didn't surprise me. The number 7 one's the one that surprised me, and I don't think there's any way you ever get this person.
What, like, team? Or give me a team or an era or something.
He played for the Celtics. He's played for the Lakers. He's played for the Cavs.
Celtics.
He won Lakers, a title with the Celtics.
Celtics, Lakers, Cavs. Did you say another team?
He's played for a few other. He played for a cup of coffee in Memphis, I think. Or New Orleans. He played for New Orleans. He played for Sacramento for a year. He played for Dallas for a year. He played for Chicago for a year.
I should know this now as you're rattling off all these teams, but nothing is leaping out at me.
It's Rondo.
All right.
You're surprised by that, right? You're surprised by that.
A little bit. Just because I wouldn't have thought he would have racked up enough.
He has 1,136 assists.
All right.
He's only seven behind Parker.
Okay. I don't think of Tony Parker as having a huge – I don't think of him as having game-by-game assist huge numbers. His is more a longevity.
And just okay,
the number, yeah, yeah. Number of playoff games he's okay. played. So
rounding out the top 12, the people we didn't say, Nash was number 9.
Yeah, I just, again, figure he didn't play enough.
Scottie Pippen is number 10.
Makes sense.
And the guy who wasn't really known for passing the basketball – shot a lot of shots. Kobe Bryant, number 11.
You're looking at guys that have had long careers and have played lots of playoff games, basically, is what you're looking at. Somebody who had the ball in their hands quite a bit. All those guys sort of fit that mold.
Yeah, yeah. So that was the assist one. So I just figured I...
All right, that was good. I did pretty well on that one.
I'm pretty proud of you, Mike.
Thank you. Thank you.
Pretty proud of you. All right, so we're going to focus our attention on the first game of the night, which was Boston-Atlanta. And here's what I'm going to say, Mike, and I texted it to you immediately after the game. The true winners in this Atlanta win are the Philadelphia 76ers, who we'll talk about. And I don't know if we – you know, obviously they're laying in wait to see who they're going to play, okay, from this series. All right. They have the status of Joel Embiid up in the air. It sounds like there's a chance he's going to miss the first few games of the series.
A chance? Are you saying there's a chance?
Well, I mean, have they officially said how long he's going to be out?
He's whatever, man.
They've made
he's,
him dupe. They've been
he's compromised. He's out. He's injured. He's not 100%.
This is exactly what we talked about. This is exactly what we talked about.
It ain't happening. Sorry, Philly. It ain't happening, man. It ain't happening.
Yeah, but I'm saying this is still helping them because
it helps them. I mean, I guess you get Embiid a couple more days rest, but is he going to make it through the next series and the next series and the next series and have this knee be 100%? And if it's not his knee, it's going to be something else.
Yeah,
you can't if you're Philadelphia. If you're a Sixers fan, you cannot have any faith that he's going to be 100% healthy. We've been saying it for the entire season, and I'm going to continue to say it. Until he can stay healthy for an entire postseason run and he can put a team on his back and play 40 minutes a night, which is required by your team's best player, I'm just not buying it. I'm in the mode where he has to show me, he has to prove it. There's no track record that he's going to be able to stay healthy and be the guy that can play those major minutes and do what's necessary to get his team an NBA championship. There's no way that he and the Sixers are lasting through the next three rounds and coming out with 12 more wins in this season. It's just not happening. There's no way.
Yeah, I agree. I'm sorry. I know we were focusing on Boston, but I just still feel like the Sixers are the winner in the series so far. Here's what I want to say before we really dive into this. The last 2 days, playoff basketball has been just phenomenal. There's been the game after game after game. And I guess we could even go back to the Sacramento Golden State game, right? Like, that was a great game.
That was an incredible game with some really
bizarre,
incredible boneheaded moves by Steph and the Warriors. I mean, and yeah, that game was very, very odd. It was a great game and a thoroughly entertaining game.
So that was an entertaining game. And then obviously, you know, yesterday, the two games yesterday, the Butler game, which we'll talk about, and LeBron. And then this game, you know, that game right there tonight, the Boston game, great game, like down to the wire, back to back. And now, currently, as we're recording this, there's 4 minutes left in Minnesota-Denver, and it's a four-point game, and this has been a good game the whole game. Minnesota's had the lead majority of the time, so it's just like game after game has been so good. It's like almost like March Madness in a sense, Mike. Like, you never know who's going to win a game. Like, it's just kind of crazy. It's
been very topsy-turvy. It has not been – I texted you tonight. You can kind of throw chalk out the window because – typically in the NBA playoffs, we just kind of think of it being, well, the best teams are the best teams, and those are the teams that eventually are going to make it to the NBA finals. But this season's playoffs has mirrored the regular season, where, especially in the Western Conference, you had no idea what to expect. And in the East, there was obviously much more of a consensus about who the top four teams were throughout the entire season. But one of those teams, the Cavs, is in huge trouble.
And no, two of those teams are in huge trouble, Mike.
Correct. I'm getting to that. And then Milwaukee's in huge trouble. And I don't think Boston is in huge trouble, but Boston could be staring down a game seven, which I don't think they in any way, shape, or form thought that was going to happen with the Atlanta Hawks. So
especially with Atlanta not having Murray tonight.
Right.
Like, I
mean, gutty performance by the Hawks. I mean, there's nothing you could say. I mean, I think when I look at what's happened tonight to this point, and I think about the fact that Atlanta wins in Boston down 3-1. You have the Clippers currently ahead by 9 at halftime in Phoenix down 3-1. You have the Nuggets who are winning. It's a 4-point game. Minnesota down 3-1 in Denver, but competing and fighting for their life. Man, the Cavs tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at home. Game five, they better come out and play. And we'll leave the Cavs talk for a few minutes, but the way that these three teams tonight have come out and competed, and all three of them are on the road in a game five, down 3-1.
Not to mention the fact that, you know, the Timberwolves are down 3-0, and they came back and fought and kept the series going. So, like, normally when a team does that, they won a game and – like, at least they won a game. And then Denver's going to come back out and punch them in the mouth and take care of business. Well, Minnesota was the team that came out. They were clearly the hungry team to start the game tonight. They were up 15 points early. It was 29-14, I think, at one point. And I texted you during this game. And I know, once again, I can know we're jumping around a little bit here. But, like, the free throw discrepancy was outrageous. Like, at one point, Denver had shot like 17 free throws and Minnesota had shot 4. Like, and I know that's probably something to do with they're not as disciplined, Minnesota, and they've been tending to get in foul trouble, but it's just all these games have been so good. And all these teams, like you said, that are like, a lot of times these teams that are down 3-0 or 3-1, they just, I don't want to say roll over and die, but,
well, and the other teams are just better, right? Usually, I mean, it comes down to, if you're up 3-1 and you have a game five at home, that means you're the higher seed. You've probably been the better team all season. And typically those teams just take care of business. They do what they need to do in order to wrap that series up and win. And the fact that we have Atlanta winning that game five on the road, we have the Clippers who may or may not win tonight against Phoenix, but
without
certainly
Kawhi.
Are acquitting them. Right, without Kawhi, without Paul George. Clearly they're acquitting themselves pretty well. And Minnesota is probably going to lose this game, I'm guessing, but
yeah,
they're at least
so
battling.
Too.
They're at least battling and giving Denver everything they could have wanted here in this game five. So getting back to Atlanta, I think there's a couple things that you have to look at. One is just the toughness that Atlanta showed tonight is something that I think most people over the course of the season have felt like this team has sort of lacked, right? That they've been underachieving, haven't done what they're supposed to do. People thought they were going to be a lot better than they were. And tonight they just come out and they compete. And they very, very easily could have given up at multiple times throughout this game. They were down, I think, 102-89 at one point. They were down, I think, 111-101. So you're down 10 points within, I would say, under 4 minutes. Maybe they were down 10. And then they went to the completely ISO Trae Young, bring the ball up the floor, pull up and take a jumper, maybe get a screen and try to go to the basket. Pretty much for the last 4 minutes, nobody touched the ball, which I wasn't super enamored with watching that because there was a couple of possessions where he took shots that didn't go in, but there were a lot of other possessions where he took shots and he banged them home. And that looked very reminiscent of the Trae Young that we saw 2 years ago in the playoffs against the Knicks and the Sixers and the Bucks, where it felt like every big shot, he was there for it. And he knocked in some huge, huge shots tonight. They got a really good game from John Collins. And then I think on the Boston side of it, Tatum, I don't know. What's your feeling on Tatum?
Mike, I go back and forth on that guy.
I'm out, like, man. Like, I've always been out as him being a top five player in the league. To me, when you have the physical tool set that that guy has, you can't go 1 for 11 from three. If your three isn't dropping and you're 6'8" and you're Jason Tatum, then you got to figure out other ways to get to the rim and score and do things. And I just think that he's a guy who, he's just a notch below what the best players in the league, the historically, the guys who have been top five players in the league, I just don't think those guys come up with these kind of stinkers like Tatum had tonight. And he wasn't awful.
Well, I mean, Mitchell had a stinker the other day.
Well, we and I talked about that. We're going to talk about it more. I mean, I think Donovan Mitchell, first-team All-NBA, he's been great all year. But we could not – we're not going to relitigate the Donovan Mitchell trade based off this one series and four games against the Knicks. But like I told you before, and we'll talk about it more, Donovan Mitchell has to show up in game four in the Garden with a young team and that's struggling to score. He can't score 2 points in the second half and 18 for the game. You need more out of the guy. And tonight the Celtics needed more out of Tatum and they didn't get it. And they got more out of Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown was there.
Would you take, okay, Mike, here you go. Here's the other question. Would you rather have Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum?
It's interesting because I think in a big game, I think I'd rather have Jaylen Brown. I think over the course of the season, I'd rather have Tatum.
Tatum's I agree. Probably, I think Jaylen Brown also is a better defender, right?
I would agree. I think the thing with Jaylen Brown compared to Tatum is Brown is not the same level of playmaker and facilitator that Tatum is. When you look at Brown's statistics from an assist to turnover ratio, he's about 1-to-1 or maybe slightly more than that. So he just doesn't distribute the ball and get his teammates involved in the same way that Tatum can. Tatum is a much better facilitator. But if you ask me which guy I would need to score 30 points in a big game, I think I'd put my money on Brown. Now look, last year against Milwaukee, game six, Boston was down 3-2 and Tatum came in with what did he get in that game? 49, I think, 46, something like that. I mean, he had a huge game on the road in Milwaukee, played about as well as any guy could play. And I think people thought, and I know you and I had a discussion at that time thinking, hey, was that the final leap? Again, we got to remember that Tatum's what? He's like 24 years old, 25 years old. And so he probably really hasn't hit his prime. And so I think when that game happened, you and I kind of said, maybe he's turned the corner. Maybe because he's still young, he's getting there and he's getting to the point where he's maybe going to become that guy. And then he kind of came up small in the finals last year. Started off this regular season like gangbusters, was probably in the first month of the season, was probably a front runner for MVP when Boston was playing really well and had the best record in the league. And since then, he's kind of tailed off and I'm not sure that I think any differently about him than I did before that 46 or 49 point explosion against the Bucks in game six last year. I still think that he's one small step of consistency below what the greatest players in the game historically have been able to do. Now, he's still young. I mean, it's crazy to keep saying it because he's been in the league for whatever, I don't know, 7 years now. But I don't know if he's ever going to get there. If I had a big game and I wanted somebody to score 35 in that game and I had to choose between Brown and Tatum, I think I'd take Brown. I think Tatum's a better player, especially over the course of 82 games. But Brown has really played well in big spots for the last couple of years. And both those guys have played in a ton of playoff games. They got a ton of experience. But I was disappointed in Tatum's performance. I think if you're a Celtics fan, this is a case where you want Tatum, your best player, to step on the other team's throat and just put that series away. And he didn't do it tonight.
Yep. All right, Mike, just a quick update. Minnesota-Denver tied with 1:10 left. This is a good game. This is exciting, Mike.
It's coming down to the end.
Enemies. All right. So So I guess let's just say, will Boston close it out in six, or do you think this is going to seven?
Well, don't forget they did it without DeJounte Murray too, who stupidly, what's he doing bumping official, man? What's he doing? I mean,
there are clowns everywhere, Mike.
There are. That's a good one.
You know what we should do?
There's the clowns everywhere edition of the pod.
We should maybe one of the off season things is we pick a clown. Who's the biggest clown?
Who's
the biggest clown on each team?
Yeah, we got to get their clowns everywhere. We're gonna get a little bit more of that going. I think it's always a good saying. Yeah, I mean, I just don't know what DeJounte Murray is doing. Just totally stupid, and could have cost his team their season. It turned out that wasn't the case. So now Atlanta goes back home. If you're Atlanta, you got to feel pretty good about your chances going back home to Atlanta. And Trey's obviously feeling good about how he played. As I said earlier, Collins had a really good game tonight. Bogdanovich was good. Hunter, defensively, I think he still leaves you wanting a lot. But defensively tonight, I thought he was good. He at least made Tatum and Brown work for what they got. And if you're Atlanta, I think you got to feel pretty good about, hey, we win game six and let's go back to Boston and take our chances. Trey, you say what you want about him, and he's been, I would say, below his standard for most of this season and clearly for most of the playoffs. But, man, tonight he was back to what we witnessed 2 years ago, where it felt like he could do kind of whatever he wanted. Either he was going to get to the line and get fouled if he drove, or he was going to just bang home one of those threes. I mean, that shot over Jaylen Brown, the last one that he made, the three. I mean, a little jab as he's coming down the floor 7 seconds to go. He's just casually kind of coming up, and he just, boom, get that little jab with his right foot, steps back, clears enough space, and Brown went up to challenge it, and didn't matter. Bang, it was all over.
Yep. He played really well tonight. I'm still not a believer. I want to be clear here.
No, you're not a believer. I don't think you can be a believer.
He took 33 shots tonight, Mike.
Right.
I know he had to, but...
No, I agree. Look, there are very few players in the league. Let me say it this way. There are very few players in the league who could do what Trae Young did tonight. Would you agree or disagree?
Agree.
So I think what you're looking at is he's a guy who has a very unique and interesting skill set in that he's a really good passer. He's a guy who has a reputation as being a really good shooter. But if you look at his statistics over the course of his career, he's really an average to maybe below average 3-point shooter, especially for the volume of shots that he takes. And he's not a guy that, it's been well documented, doesn't seem like people really love playing with Trae Young, which is weird again because he's such a good passer, but yet he really likes to shoot. And then he's just abjectly horrible on the other end as a defensive player. So there aren't many guys who can do what he did tonight, and yet at the same time, if you're building your franchise around Trae Young, I think it's a struggle. Now, I like Trae Young better if he's your second best player, surrounded by bigger guys who can defend. You have to build a very specific type of team around Trae Young to cover for his weaknesses on the defensive end of the floor, but there aren't many guys in the league that can do what he did tonight.
All right, there's one other thing I wanted to bring up, Mike. Atlanta didn't have faith in their own team. Did you know this, Mike?
I did not.
They double-booked the State Farm Arena for the Game 6. They also had a Janet Jackson concert scheduled for Thursday.
Janet's out. I didn't know she was still making music.
Well, it's called the Together Again Tour, which probably means that she's just playing all her old hits. So now they moved the concert to Friday. But I thought
crafty
that was pretty funny.
Crafty move by the Omni.
Yeah.
What's it called now? Phillips Arena? Is that?
No, isn't it State Farm Arena now? Isn't
is
it?
That what it is? Wasn't it Phillips Arena, though, I think when it first came out? When they first replaced the Omni? I missed the Omni.
I think. Maybe it's not State Farm. Maybe I'm confused. But
I went to some NCAA tournament games at the Omni.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when I was on a recruiting visit to Oglethorpe University. At the time, it was an NAIA school. I went down there. I saw...
It is the State Farm Arena. Man, I'm good.
There you go.
State Farm Drive.
Nice. I saw Mookie Blaylock and the Oklahoma Sooners play against Louisville in the NCAA tournament. Yeah. So that was fun. Good recruiting trip. That was fun.
Yeah, it didn't work, though.
No, it didn't work. Their gym was smaller than my high school gym. Beautiful campus.
Jokic. Yuck. I don't know where. I know. I only saw he missed the first free throw. So right now it's Denver 111, Minnesota 109.
All right. I'm one step ahead of you. So do you want me to spoil it?
Did he make the free throw?
Makes the second one. Then okay. Timberwolves timeout.
Timeout.
So,
okay.
112, 109, Denver.
Okay. Who's taking the. I know we're doing this live. So I know we're jumping around. But who's taking the shot? Anthony Edwards?
I mean, it better be, right?
Not. Well, Torian Prince?
Cat? You want Cat taking it?
No, Cat fouled out. He's out. He fouled
out. He's out. Okay. Well, that's good. That's good.
Rudy Gobert?
Rudy? You want Rudy launching a three?
Mike Conley for three?
Mike Conley. He made a big one a second ago, right?
Yeah. So
no, you got to have the ball in Edwards' hands. I mean, there's no doubt.
You're not allowed to spoil it since you're a little bit ahead of me. But anyway,
okay,
I won't. We'll see what happens in a minute here. But all right, so let's move to another Eastern Conference series. Let's go to the game that happened yesterday, the Heat and the Bucks. Like, okay, Mike, is there any chance? Like, do you have any faith in the Bucks right now, or is it like, or is the Heat are the Heat winning this series, Mike? Like,
okay.
Let me rephrase it.
Okay.
Do you have more faith, or who's in bigger trouble, the Cavs or the Bucks right now?
The Cavs.
Okay. Do you think that the Heat are winning the series, or do you think that Milwaukee's going to end up winning the series now? 3-1. Giannis is clearly compromised. Okay. Clearly compromised.
Although he did have, did he finish with a triple double?
I believe he did, but yeah. Like he's just clear. You could tell though, he's not.
Right. He's not himself, but he still finished with a triple double. Look, you had a historic Jimmy Butler performance. What's funny about this game, at least from my perspective, is I didn't see a whole lot of it until like the last.
Were you sleeping on your couch?
No, I was not sleeping for this game, but I was actually helping my daughter do homework. And because we got back from practice and we were doing some math. So we were sitting at the kitchen counter and we were trying to figure out the surface area of cylinders is what we were working on.
That's a good stuff right there.
Yeah, it is. So we were sitting and I had the game cast on and at one point I think the Bucks were up by like 13 with maybe 7 minutes to go. And my plan was that if the game was close, I was going to get up and take a break from doing homework and go watch the end of the game. And I'm like, it's probably not going to get close because they're up 13. It felt like they were kind of taking control. And then the next time I checked was with about 5 minutes left, 3.5 minutes. I don't know, somewhere. It was somewhere 4 minutes ago, somewhere in there. And Miami had tied it or was down by one. I was like, how did this happen? And then I went in and saw that the two Butler threes were just incredible shots, and clearly he was on fire the entire game. What did he start out with?
Oh my god, he almost made that, Mike. I know you didn't see it. Oh man, that's a bummer.
Edwards. Of course, I mean, it had to be.
He just back ironed it. It was a good look. Oh well, that series is over. Sorry,
Denver 4-1. All right, so. Yeah, I mean, Butler's performance yesterday, 22 in the first quarter, he was incredible. The question you have to ask yourself is, does he have three more of those in him? Because Miami is just so depleted as far as what they can do offensively without Hero, and you're dusting off Duncan Robinson, and you're relying on Gabe Vincent and Max Strus and all these guys. It just feels like what Butler did, look, I know he's done it many, many times in the playoffs, but it feels like he's done it on a every other game basis. And so maybe, I guess he only needs one more, right? You only need one more vintage Jimmy performance, and that is enough to propel you into the second round. I don't know. For some reason, I still feel like Milwaukee's going to win it, although you have to be a little bit disturbed that, again, they lose game three without Giannis. They lose this game four, with him back. You can't feel good about where you are if you're the Bucks. And there's been a lot of talk on national podcasts about Coach Bud and his lack of ability to adjust to what's happening and figure out, hey, They don't really have anybody else besides Jimmy. Can we double team him and make him give it to somebody else and see if they can beat us? Or do we just continue to play Brook Lopez in our drop coverage and let Butler kind of walk into whatever he wants to walk into? And that's concerning. And it's been concerning. It's something that I guess winning the title kind of erased, the fact that people had a lot of concerns about Mike Budenholzer as the coach prior to the Bucks winning the title. And buying a champ, winning a championship obviously buys you a lot of grace. But I don't know. I think Milwaukee has a better chance to come back than the Cavs. But I think both teams honestly have to look at it and say, we've played about as poorly as we can play. Our opponents have played really, really well and gotten a lot of contributions from role players who I'm not sure those players you're going to count on to come through game after game after game. So I still think I lean towards Milwaukee just because I just don't think you're getting another Butler game like that. And I don't know that Miami has enough around him to be able to compensate for Jimmy just playing at an average level. But look, would I be surprised if Miami wins one of these next three games? No, and I'd be surprised if they win game five. I mean, I think Milwaukee is going to come out and win game five, but you tell me Miami wins one of these next three and I'm not surprised at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Miami's going to do it, Mike. I think they're going to do it. And then what you texted me is going to come to fruition that we're really going to be kicking ourselves.
Does anybody want to watch a Heat-Knicks playoff series?
Spike Lee?
Not here. John McEnroe. Not here in Cleveland. We don't want to watch Ben Stiller. I can tell you that. Yeah, I can tell you that. I don't want to watch it. It's a golden opportunity missed for the Cavs if Miami wins it. And that's obviously a golden opportunity for the Knicks. I mean, I think if you go into that next series, right, the Knicks, if they beat the Cavs, the Knicks are going to be favored over the Heat. I think if the Cavs were to come back and beat the Knicks, they'd be favored over the Heat. So both of those teams, you should be looking at, look, the Cavs got a lot more work to do than the Knicks do. But if the Cavs win game five, all of a sudden now if you're the Knicks, there's a little bit of pressure going back to Madison Square Garden. And who knows what happens, but we'll have to see. But yeah, I think Milwaukee still, I don't love their chances of coming back, but I think if I had to put a bet, if I had to put one of your quarter bets down, I think I would still bet on Milwaukee coming back and winning this series. But I won't be surprised if Miami wins one of the last three, but I'd put my money on the Bucks.
Okay. All right. I don't have anything else to say on that series. Are we good? We're good to move on?
Let's just talk about the Sixers quick.
We've already kind of hit a lot of the main points, but the bottom line is this: it's not looking good for the Sixers' chances if Embiid's out. Now, once again, like, you tell me that Atlanta somehow pulls this out. I don't think it's happening. This is Boston, I think, is winning the series, but somehow Atlanta pulls it out, and you tell me that, like, would that be? I mean, the Sixers would be thanking their lucky stars, right? The only problem is now Harden's going to be in Atlanta for a few games, and we know what he's going to do there. So we just got to read between the lines. My big thing is this. Like, the Sixers are enjoying being off. They were clearly the better team. The Nets were definitely, like, outmatched, in my opinion. They played hard, and they were in some of those games, but clearly the Sixers were the better team, and that's the only team, and that's really the only team that took care of business the way that we thought was going to happen on the first round. Everything else has been a battle for teams. Like, once again, even though Denver won 4-1, like, all those games except for, like, one were close, right?
I think the first two, I can't remember the exact scores, but I believe that Denver won those first two games pretty easily. Let me look. I have it right here in front of me, so I can tell you exactly. Where is it? Where did that, of course, that one? There we go. So we had Denver 109, Minnesota 80 in game one, and then Denver 122, Minnesota 113 in game two. So they won both of those first two games relatively easily. And then even the third game, they won by nine. So I think Denver, as far as the favorites, I think Denver and Philly took care of business probably the easiest, as we have a lot of the other favorites that are in some trouble. But Philly, look, I said it earlier, I don't trust Embiid to play injury-free and play 40 minutes and be able to be a guy that carries a team through four rounds of the playoffs. I just don't see it. Our disdain for James Harden is well known to anybody who listens to the podcast. And yet at the same time, look, if Atlanta somehow beats Boston and the other side of the bracket is Heat-Knicks, I mean, who knows? If that's the scenario, then maybe Philly does get through to the finals. But I think they find a way to blow it, even if that's the case. I think they find a way to blow it. I'll leave it there.
Okay. All right. All right. It's time, Mike. Are you ready to give your eulogy?
I'll let you start.
The disappointment in my face on Friday. My dad looked at I texted you at I went to my dad's house to watch the game, and I looked at him at halftime, and my dad said, you look like your dog just died. And I was like, I'm very disappointed in the Cavs right now. I was very disappointed, and you and I were texting a little bit during that game, and I just couldn't believe at how they were so unmotivated and looked so disorganized and just blah. And then to come back on Sunday, and credit them for at least attempting to fight back in the third quarter and actually taking the lead at one point, before laying that turd of a fourth quarter. Like, so much disappointment I have, but just, I don't know, I just had higher aspirations, and they just haven't looked good. I will say, I think they're going to come out tomorrow and they're going to win. They're going to come out and be motivated to win. I really think they're going to come out and play well tomorrow home, which we play better at home. We've talked about this, and I think they're going to come out. I think they're going to win tomorrow, Mike. But I don't believe they have much of a shot to win this series. So my bottom line is, Mike, I think the Cavs are going to win the game tomorrow. I don't have much hope that they're going to win three in a row at this point. If they somehow manage to win tomorrow and Friday, then you know, all bets are off. But I just don't see them winning Friday. I see them winning tomorrow and not Friday. I think Bickerstaff's probably in the hot seat. I don't know that he deserves it, because I don't really know all the pundits who keep, and even Simmons keeps talking about, I can't believe the Cavs just let Kevin Love go. Like, I don't think Kevin Love's changing either of any of the outcomes for any of the games, but at least he could do something. Like get a rebound or something, I guess. But
Who's our backup bigs? I mean, who are we playing?
I know you or me might be able to play backup big at this point.
You're not playing anybody, right? I mean, they're not playing anybody.
So Kevin Love could play a few minutes at those positions, right?
Yeah, you don't have anybody. I mean, you're basically bringing in wings or guards, and you're going with one big when one of those guys subs out. You're not bringing anybody off your bench that plays power forward or plays center. So it's odd that they release Kevin Love when he's a guy. Look, is he making a difference in this series to the point where he wins the Cavs a game? I mean, I guess if he got hot from three, maybe you could say that. It just seems odd that you got rid of him for nothing, for what? He was seemingly happy with this team. I mean, I know he wanted to play more, and there was time, you know, as his tenure with the Cavs wound down, he wasn't playing very much. And so I think that was part of the Cavs wanting to accommodate him, and him wanting to get out to a place where he could play more. But the Cavs really weren't under no obligation to do that. And I think that if you projected out the roster to the playoffs, it seems silly to let a guy go that could have been at least a functional member of the team. Kevin Love, with a lot of experience, is a guy you could at least put out there on the floor and know that he wasn't going to quake in the face of the pressure and the playoffs and all these things. So, yeah, it seems strange that they got rid of him. I told you and when we talked on the phone earlier today that my concern with this team and looking at them and looking at the performance that they put out there in these first four games, it harkens back for me to the Brad Doherty, Mark Price, Larry Nance Cavaliers of the late 80s, early 90s, where they're a really, really good regular season team, tremendously skilled team, but a team that played on a very even keel. And when teams raised their intensity level in the playoffs, they just didn't have an answer because they were playing at their highest gear all the time. And when they needed to kick it into another gear or when they needed that extra level of toughness or in your face or grittiness or whatever it was, it just felt like they always just came up kind of a little bit short in that area. And that's kind of how this series has felt to me. It's like the Knicks have stepped up their intensity and they've pounded the Cavs on the offensive glass and they've just come up with bigger plays and bigger moments. And I told you too earlier when we talked that game four to me was a superstar takes the reins of the game and says, my team's not going to lose. And maybe you still lose the game. Maybe that superstar can't carry the rest of his guys over the finish line, but Donovan Mitchell can't score 2 points in the second half and only get 18. I mean, he's first team All-NBA, has had an incredible, incredible season, but other than game one when he had 38, he really hasn't been the guy that we saw during the regular season. He hasn't been nearly as good. And your best player, especially a guy who we're talking about, he's a top 10, top 15 player in the league, has to be better than what he is. Jalen Brunson has clearly been the best guard in the series from start to finish, clearly. I mean, it's not even close in terms of his shot making, in terms of his leading and organizing a team. Garland's had two good halves. He had a great first half in game two when he had 26, and then he had a great second half in game four. Specifically, he had a great third quarter, not really a great fourth quarter. And other than that, Garland's been, I would say, disappointing as well. And so you need Mitchell. Mitchell's got to come and be the best player on the floor because he should be. Based on his pedigree, he should be the best player on the floor, and he hasn't been. In game one, he was probably Brunson's equal, and in the other three games, he definitely was not the best player on the floor. And the Cavs are not going to win if he's not going to play at a very, very, very high level. I told you before the series, I thought that what needed to happen was, and I kind of took Mitchell as for granted. I thought he was going to be All-NBA Donovan Mitchell. I mean, I penciled that in. I felt 99% certain that Mitchell was going to have a great series. And I told you before the series, I thought that the key was Garland had to play well because I thought Brunson would maybe not match Mitchell, but I thought Brunson would play well. And he's done more than match him. He's outplayed him. And then Garland had to play well and that the Cavs needed one random guy per game to give them something. And so in game two, they got that, right? Caris LeVert had a big game two. Other than that, I mean, they haven't had any wild card performances of a guy that kind of outperformed what you thought that they were capable of doing. And as a result of that, the Cavs are down 3-1. And yet, you can look at the Knicks scoring totals, 101, 90, 99, 102. I think the Cavs would take that. It's just been their offense has been ridiculously bad. And part of that is because Mobley and Allen can't shoot. And that mucks up the spacing. And if you play LeVert, then you got to live with his herky-jerky, over-dribbling, taking bad shots, not being able to finish, and taking chances that maybe he has a great night, which he did in game two, but maybe he doesn't, which is kind of where he's been the rest of the series. Or you put Okoro out there, and granted, I know you talked about how well Okoro played against Brunson in the third quarter in game four, which he did, but the Knicks don't even guard him. I mean, they're just completely leaving him alone and abandoning him wherever he is. And that just puts another guy in the way for Mitchell and Garland. And yet at the same time, I don't know what the answers are. I mean, I don't know who you throw out there that is going to make a difference. I just don't think there are many moves for Bickerstaff to make from a personnel standpoint. I mean, I do think that there are things that he can do and that he's tried from a strategic standpoint with going with more guard-to-guard screens to try to get Brunson locked in on a ball handler and give them an opportunity to attack him, which they've done, and I think they've done fairly successfully. But they just don't have enough options on offense. I mean, they're at this point, they're one guy short, and they're also a Mobley 18-foot consistent jump shot away from being, I think, a really good offensive team in the playoffs. And it just points out, again, how different playoff basketball is from regular season basketball, because when teams have the opportunity to zero in on your weaknesses, the way that the Knicks have zeroed in on what the Cavs do not do well, things can be exploited, and the Knicks are certainly exploiting some of the weaknesses that the Cavs have on both ends of the floor. So
I think the Cavs are going to win tomorrow, and then I don't have much hope for us to win the series. So I'm being negative Nancy.
All right. Well, here's what I think. I think that game five, I will not be stunned at all if the Cavs lose game five based on how they performed in these first four. I just feel like the Knicks have sort of figured the Cavs out, and I'm a little worried, as I said before, that they're just soft. And I think this game five is going to tell us a lot about who they are as a team, both in the moment and moving forward. And I guess I'm kind of going 50-50 where I feel like they could very well lose game five, but I feel like if they win game five, that there's a path for them to win the series. So I'm going to say that if they lose game five, obviously I won't be surprised and the series is over. But if they win game five, I think they come back and they win it in seven.
I like your thinking, Mike. I don't have much
confidence. I'm not basing that on anything strategic. Who knows? If they lose in five, welcome to Cleveland, Nick Nurse.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't complain about that. Would you complain about that?
I don't know. I like Bickerstaff okay, but I'm not a huge Bickerstaff guy.
Yeah. So, all right. So now we're going to move, since we've talked about the Eastern Conference for way longer than we probably anticipated we were going to talk about the Eastern Conference. We're going to move to the Western Conference, and I don't know if we'll do some quick hits. I think we said a lot on the Denver-Minnesota game tonight already, just because we kind of were talking about it as the game was going on. But Denver's won the series. They're up 4-1, or they would finish the series 4-1. Now they await. Denver won, so they're going to play the winners of 4-5. So they're going to know tonight, because Phoenix is also going to win, right? I mean, this is over. This is
correct.
Done.
Yeah. What about Phoenix putting up 50 in the third quarter?
That's pretty impressive, Mike. That's
crazy, man.
That's pie in the sky. That's what they were anticipating when they got Durant. Now, once again, it's against a depleted, Clippers team without Kawhi and Paul George. But still, I mean, 50 points is still 50 points, right? Like, it's not like these are like, it's not like you're a team of Jokic's at the YMCA, Mike.
That was a good tweet, wasn't it?
That was a good one. Those guys.
I totally enjoyed that one. Here's all you got to say about Denver is they took care of business against Minnesota. Playoff Jokic, 26 a game, 11 rebounds, 8 assists. Tonight he had a triple-double even though he shot the ball poorly. He's clearly one of the best players in the league. He comes to play in the playoffs. He's a guy that you can't really defend him. He shoots it at such a high percentage. This whole thing is set up for Denver to win an NBA championship. I mean, I don't know if they will. I don't know if the other supporting cast is good enough, but Jokic is going to be there. He doesn't get hurt. He plays tons and tons of minutes. He's an offense unto himself. Can they defend well enough to beat some of these better teams? I mean, we're going to find out next round with what Phoenix is going to bring to the table. Can Denver match that? It's going to be a great series. I can't wait to watch that. I'm going to watch probably every second of that series because hopefully it'll be on late, so I'll be able to sit on the couch and watch those games if I can stay awake. But I'm looking forward to that series. It's going to be a really, really fun series. And look, I still think Denver has got to be the favorite to get out of the West, but who knows? We'll see what Phoenix brings to the table. Those guys are playing a lot of minutes in Phoenix. That's going to add up. I know that there's a bigger track record of Durant being able to continue to play well, playing major minutes, but he gets older all the time. And Chris Paul, obviously, his track record is the exact opposite. It tells you he's going to go down at some point. And if any one of those four guys is compromised in any way, Phoenix has no depth whatsoever. I mean, they just have nobody that Monty Williams trusts coming off that bench. I guess Campaign was back tonight, which helps, but that's going to be a very interesting series because Denver has good depth. They have a good bench, and it's just going to be a contrast of styles, and there's a whole bunch of things to be able to look at in that series, and we'll probably talk about that more, but I'm excited for that Denver-Phoenix series for sure.
Since this is done, all right, and if for godforsaken reason Phoenix blows this, which I don't think is going to happen, the question that I have, Mike, is who's winning that series, Denver or Phoenix?
Denver.
I'm taking Phoenix, Mike. I'm changing my mind. The 50-point quarter did me in.
That's it? The 50-point quarter?
That's all I needed to see.
All right.
They're coalescing,
look,
Mike.
You can make an argument that Phoenix's top four is the best top four in the entire league, but they just don't have anything else. And I think the longer that this goes on and the more they have to play 40 minutes in every game just to be able to get victories, maybe that fatigue doesn't set in until the conference finals. Maybe they do beat Denver because they're still fresh enough and Chris Paul is still healthy. I think eventually that catches up to them. I think the altitude in Denver, you're talking about those guys having to play potentially four games at altitude in Denver. I don't know. I just think Denver, look, they went through that lull at the end of the season, which caused people to, I think, start to question whether or not they were a legitimate title contender. Leading into that final swoon, most people, I think, felt pretty confident that Denver was, I don't want to say an overwhelming favorite, but felt like they were the clear favorites to get out of the West. And I really still feel like they're the best team. I think that they have the best player, and that makes their offense one that I think all these other teams are going to have a really hard time dealing with. Now, Denver's going to have a hard time dealing with Phoenix. There's no question that trying to defend Durant and trying to defend Booker is going to be a challenge for this team. But I just feel like Jokic is going to get it done. It feels like this is the year where he doesn't win the MVP and he takes his team on a finals run. So I'm going to pick Denver in that series.
Okay. Well, I'm taking Phoenix, Mike. I just think what they have is something that, I mean, I know they're going to have to play a lot of minutes, but they have that's the best top four. And I think they're going to do it. And
all right.
And that's that. All right. So let's go to the game that you fell asleep during.
All right, hold on. Wait, can we do a Clippers post-mortem?
Okay, go ahead.
Come on, man. If you're the Clippers, how disappointed do you have to be?
They're cursed.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, Kawhi comes out, plays those first two games, and looks just incredible. Looks like he's as good as he's ever been. And then, boom, he disappears. Paul George has been gone this entire series. And those two guys have been there for 4 years, and I know they made a Western Conference Finals run in 2021, but it certainly wasn't a memorable one. And the year has been a disappointment. They each have one more year left on their contract. Who knows what happens? Clippers are moving to a new arena, and I think not next season, but the season after. Whew, man. I mean, what do you do with Kawhi if you're the Clippers or if you're any other team? And how do you sign the guy? Like, we talk about Kyrie being toxic. I'm not saying that Kawhi is toxic, but how much money would any team be willing to give this guy when he clearly just can't stay healthy anymore? He can't stay healthy anymore. It's just, it's a shame, because if you look at what this team kind of rejuvenating Russ. Russ was so much fun to watch in this series, which is crazy to say after what we watched in LA with the Lakers and how bad he was. He was just so much fun to watch in this series. He was back to being Oklahoma City Russ, where his athleticism just stood out, even in a game among...
Easy for you to say?
Easy for me to say. Even in a game among NBA players, Russ's athleticism just leaped off the screen. And it's a shame that he didn't get a chance to play with Paul and Kawhi. It just, if you're a Clippers fan, you just have to be sick about it.
I think they're going to bring him back, right?
Probably. You would have to think so. I mean, I don't know what the number is where he's going to be happy and they're going to be happy. But yeah, I would think that why wouldn't you if you're the Clippers?
Yeah, as long as the money works.
Yeah, we'll see.
You got to bring him back.
We'll see.
So, all right. Man, oh man. Year 20, baby. That guy, he's just so good, Mike. He's so good. As you would say, and as I'll say, the second greatest player of all time, right? You're willing to say that, Mike? You're willing to say that, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, we said it before, the totality of his career, nobody's had a better career than LeBron James. Nobody. I mean, Kareem, from a longevity standpoint, is right there with him. And obviously, up until LeBron broke his record, he was the all-time leading scorer. So those two guys, when you talk about similarity of career, I think Kareem and LeBron, both from a longevity standpoint, titles, MVPs, everything that goes along with it, those two guys stand head and shoulders above everybody else when you talk about the totality of their career. You can argue about semantics of how you define the greatest player. For me, the greatest player is still Michael Jordan. It always will be. There was just anybody who was there. I don't know how you can deny what Jordan was, is, and will always be. But man, LeBron has had a great career. The shot that he made last night to send that game into overtime, where he lofts it high up off the glass and it goes in, didn't settle for a step back, didn't settle for a three. Instead, got to the rim, which is something that I think probably as Cavs fans, you and I were asking him to do more than he ever did. Just get to the rim, man. You're so big. And to see him to be able to do that, and then he had the finish in the overtime where he takes Dylan Brooks off the dribble and just overpowers him and scores 20 rebounds in that game. I keep saying it over and over again. Kudos to LeBron. What he's doing is absolutely incredible. There's never been anybody who has faced such high expectations at such a young age and has lived up to and exceeded those expectations. There's nothing that you can complain about with LeBron. There's nothing. And he was incredible last night when AD was terrible, and he willed that team to a win that they probably had no business getting. They're up 3-1. I don't think their work is done. I still think that Memphis is sort of in the same position as the Cavs, where I think if Memphis wins game 5, I'm not saying that the Lakers are going to wilt in game 6, but I also don't think that Ja is going to be afraid of that moment. And I wouldn't be surprised if Memphis wins game 5 that they come all the way back and somehow could win game 7. But LeBron was incredible last night.
Absolutely incredible. I think the series is over, Mike. I think it's over. I think Ja is too hurt, man. I mean, he was clearly.
Dude, struck. He scored 22 in a row in game 3.
I know, but did you see him at the end of the game yesterday? I think he's done, man.
The problem with Memphis is more, it's not so much Morant as it is their. They just don't have enough bodies. They just don't have enough guys. I mean, missing Clark and Steven Adams is huge for that team. You put those two guys back on this team, and I think they're probably still in that inner circle of title contenders. And right now, they're gonna struggle. Look, they could very easily lose game 5, but like I said, I feel the same way about them as I feel about the Cavs. I think if you can get game 5, give yourself a little momentum, maybe figure some stuff out. I don't think the Lakers are some overwhelming team that you have no chance to beat in a game 6 on the road. I just don't think they're that kind of team. Same way I don't think the Knicks are that kind of team. So I give them a chance if they can get game 5. But look, having to beat LeBron in these situations, we know that it takes some historical greatness to be able to do that. And I'm not sure that you can define the Memphis Grizzlies as being historically great. So we'll see. We'll see. I still would probably pick the Lakers, but same way I did with the Cavs. I think there's a path for Memphis to still win this series.
Okay. Fair enough, Mike. Fair enough. All right. The last series. The Sacramento Kings and Golden State tie 2-2. Some great games in this series again. Like, they've just been good. There's lots of fun information being shared by Draymond Green and company. Did you see what Draymond Green said about Harrison Barnes?
No.
Draymond said that Harrison Barnes holds him personally responsible for him getting traded, and that Harrison Barnes hasn't talked to him since it happened. And Harrison Barnes invited everyone else from the team to his wedding except for Draymond Green, even though they were all in the room when meeting with Kevin Durant.
And it would have been so fun, right, if Harrison Barnes would have made that shot.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing would have felt better. That was like the worst day of NBA. Cavs lose, Celtics win, Warriors win. That was like the triumvirate of terrible outcomes for me.
I guess. At least the
Lakers. The sad part of this is De'Aaron Fox is hurt, right? The injury to his finger. Who knows? I mean, how much does it hurt? How much can he play? What does it affect him? The series have been so good, and these two teams have played such entertaining games that, and Fox has been, look, he's been unbelievable. And if he can't play at that level, it's hard to imagine that Sacramento is going to win this game, because Sabonis has been, I don't know, bad. I don't know what the right word is. He has not been good. He's almost looked like a guy who doesn't really even belong on the floor. It's like, why is he in there? Like, they're playing him at the dotted line when he has the ball, and he's not attacking. He's not being aggressive. And it feels like Golden State's kind of got a little bit in his head. So they need Fox to be at his best. Malik Monk has been awesome in this series. Davion Mitchell's been really good on defense. Sacramento just plays an entertaining style of basketball, and then the Warriors are what they are. I mean, I think the Warriors are eminently beatable. I don't think Sacramento's some great team. And I think the Golden State run is going to come to an end, if not in Sacramento. I think it's going to come to an end probably in the next series, which would be, if it is the Lakers, if somehow it was the Lakers and Golden State, that would obviously be a very fun series. I'm still rooting for Sacramento to get through, because I think Sacramento and the Lakers would be a fun series too. There's obviously a lot of history there, going back to the Chris Webber, Mike Bibby Kings going against the Shaq and Kobe Lakers. So I think whichever iteration of that series, I'd much rather see. Again, I kind of go back and forth between, I'm not really rooting for the Lakers, but in this series, I kind of want them to win, just because I want to see the Lakers in the next series against either Sacramento or Golden State. That game the other day, game four, the way it ended with Steph calling potentially what was a disastrous
Chris
timeout.
Webber.
Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, it's going to be lost to history, obviously, because it didn't have the same impact as Weber's timeout in the national championship game against Carolina, because Golden State goes on and wins it. But if they had lost that series, they had lost that game and then gone on to lose the series, I don't want to say like that tarnishes Steph's career, because that's not the case, but it certainly would have been a black mark on his career that he would have preferred not to have on there. And then the fact that he took the shot with like 12 seconds to go on the shot clock, when they could have ran it all the way down to like 3 seconds, sort of compounded and doubled down on the timeout mistake. And it just would have been so sweet to see that Harrison Barnes shot go in and silence the crowd there at the Chase Center and watch the Warriors walk off the floor dejected. I would have so thoroughly and immensely enjoyed that. It was just disappointing that the game ended that way, because it was a great game. It was entertaining all the way through. And I think this series is going seven. I mean, I think Sacramento probably wins this game if Fox can give them anything. I think they win in game five with as bad as the Warriors have been on the road.
Did they give an official diagnosis on Fox? Like, is it like a broken finger?
I think I read that it was a fractured whatever, the tip of his index finger is fractured. So I don't know if it's just a matter of, can he play through the pain? Is it in danger of being hurt worse? What is it compromised in terms of how it can move? I really don't know the answers to any of those questions. I do know that I read tonight that he's going to try to play on it, which again is not surprising. I mean, I don't think there's very many guys that would just pack it in after you get a broken finger. You figure out and try to do the best you can in games of these, you know, at this level, at these stakes. So
yeah,
hopefully he can play and be at his best. I think Sacramento wins game five. I think Golden State wins game six. And then I think game seven, you know, who knows? Sacramento obviously has home court and Golden State's been terrible on the road, but I'm not sure that the pedigree of the Warriors and their championship experience, I think in a game seven, in a one game playoff, which essentially that would be, I think their experience probably overrides the fact that they've been so terrible on the road. And I'd say that game's a toss up. I still think Sacramento, push comes to shove, I'd maybe favor Sacramento 51-49 over the Warriors just because of the two home games and how bad Golden State's been on the road. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Warriors somehow figure out a way to pull this out, which would, I guess, if you had to go Lakers-Warriors in the next round, that wouldn't be the worst thing. I'd rather see Sacramento, but whatever. It'd be fun to see LeBron beat the Warriors one more time.
Yeah, I'm clearly rooting for Sacramento. However,
by the way, I don't mean to interrupt you, but you see the score of this game now, right?
No, I turned it off. Why? What's the score?
It's 130-125.
Oh my god!
130-127. There's 2 minutes. 2 minutes and 45 seconds left.
Oh my god! What the heck happened?
I don't know. I have no idea. I just glanced over at it right now. So it's.
I turned it off.
It's now. It's now 33-19 in the fourth quarter. Clippers.
I turned it back on now.
There you go. So kind of crazy. It's been a crazy night. So I wouldn't be surprised now if the Clippers win. I mean, come on. This is the way this. It's just the way this whole thing is. It's just the way the whole thing is going to play itself out. It's crazy.
This is crazy.
I'm going to actually put it on my screen. So I guess maybe we can't go that far. I guess maybe can't go that far ahead. This is nuts. I mean, if they actually come back and win this,
I mean, Phoenix just scored 50 points in the quarter.
It's 33-19 in this quarter, man. Powell's at the line trying to cut it to two. All right, so we'll keep our eye on this game as we wrap it up. There's nothing else in this series, right? There's nothing else. We covered all four series, right?
Yeah, that we covered everything. One.
All right, do we want to do our team draft?
I guess if you want to do it still, sure. We're trying to wait to see if this game, what this game ends up.
This isn't gonna take that long. Okay, this isn't gonna take that long. So I'll give you first pick, and then we'll just work our way through the entire playoffs of teams that are still. Of teams that are still left. They got to tie it up right here.
Well, looked like a foul.
Russ blew the layup.
That looked like a foul to me.
It did, Mike. But Russ blew it. Russ blew the layup.
Okay, so let's see. Who do I... Devin Booker, big shot.
Who's your first pick?
God, that's not an easy pick, Mike.
I know. It feels like it should be, but man...
Like, part of me thinks I probably should take Denver. I don't know. I'm not a big believer in Denver, but part of me thinks I should pick them.
All right, well, pick who you want, man.
I'm going to take Denver, Mike.
Okay. Whew. And Denver to me was the de facto number one pick. All right, I'm going to take Boston.
Okay. I'm doing it, Mike. Taking the Lakers.
I'm going to take. Ooh, man. Give me the Bucks.
Oh, man. All right. So let's see. I'm going to take. Okay. So I have Denver. I can keep loading up on the Western Conference.
Good.
I'm going to take Phoenix.
I'm going to take Sacramento.
Okay. I'll tell you. This is so bad. I don't even say this. Um,
You know what? Because I can't do what I want to do here because I just feel guilty about doing it. I'm gonna take the Heat, Mike.
Okay.
So I'm avoiding picking against the Cavs, Mike. Picking against the Cavs.
I'm gonna take the Warriors.
Okay. Now we're assuming. We're kind of assuming that the Clippers are losing this game, right?
I don't know. You could be. You could take the Clippers before the Clippers who are like a minute away from being eliminated, or you could take a team that still is alive. I don't know. Oh, he just turned it over again.
Durant.
What a terrible turnover. Terrible turnover.
This is over. Okay. So we're just going to. All right. I'm going to take. I'm going to take the Cavs, Mike.
All right.
No one said the Sixers yet.
I'll take the Grizzlies.
Wait, you took the Grizzlies over the... Oh, wait, what is going on here?
We only have three Eastern Conference teams left, I believe.
We have the Knicks. We have the Sixers.
And the Hawks.
Okay. Well, I guess is it okay if I take the Knicks and then I've guaranteed one of my teams moving on to the next round?
That's fine.
All right, I'm going to take the Knicks.
All right, I'll take the Hawks.
Oh my God, that's great. That's
so you get stuck with the Sixers. There's no chance. There is no chance. There's no scenario where the Sixers win the NBA title. There's no scenario. As proven by our draft.
Oh, that's good. That's some good stuff, Mike. That's some good stuff right there.
All right. Are we just hanging on to go play-by-play with this, or are we wrapping it up?
I mean, it's up to you, Mike. I'm happy to do whatever you want to do. There's a minute left in the game.
All right. Let's just play it out. Let's just watch this to wrap it up. A minute left, 134-130. Phoenix leads it. We can work on our play-by-play skills.
Right, Norm Powell at the top of the key passes it to Russell Westbrook, who's going to take an ill-advised shot. Oh, he threw it in the stand. He
fires it 90 miles an hour through Terrence Mann's hands.
Oh, my God. What was Terrence Mann trying to do there?
Yeah, like, Durant deflected it.
Okay, see, I foul here, Mike.
No. He's only down four.
Yeah, but it's gonna be one. They're only gonna have time for one possession.
No, you don't foul here.
That's a bad call, Mike.
If you get a stop here, you're fine.
That's a foul. See,
you fouled with 4 seconds to go.
Yeah, I know. You fouled with 4 seconds, and you fouled Durant.
And Durant just traveled, by the way. Complete travel on the start of that move.
Oh, Ty Lue. Ty Lue, man.
Ty Lue doesn't know what to do.
I told you I wrote a play with Ty Lue one time, right?
Yeah, you did tell me about that.
Well, I think that's it, Mike.
You have to feel pretty good that Durant's going to make the free throw.
He made the first one.
I know, I'm saying. You got to feel pretty good that he's going to make them.
Clippers have no timeouts left either, by the way. That's why I still would have fouled earlier. We have no timeouts. Bad timeout management.
Listen, man, if you get a stop there, you're fine.
No, you don't have the timeouts.
Right, Mike. But if you get a stop there, you're still fine because you would
drag it out.
You would have got a stop. You could have scored. You could foul. You foul in the next possession. Oh no.
Well, that's it.
Eight-second call here.
Nope.
Booker trying to get rid of it. Are they gonna foul? No, they're done. Why would you keep trapping and not falling? All right, if you're Kawhi Leonard here, what are you thinking as you sit here and watch this game? Kawhi's not there, is he? I've seen Paul George on the bench. Is Kawhi there?
That's what you're thinking.
Have you seen Kawhi?
No, I have not.
Yeah. Would you trade him for pennies on the dollar this summer? I would.
What team's taking him, though?
I don't know. I mean, if you're trading him for next to nothing, I mean, I guess you got to match salaries, but I don't know. That was a crazy game. I mean, that was just a crazy game. Phoenix-Denver, looking forward to that series. I know we said it 25 minutes ago, but it looked like maybe it wasn't going to happen. So, yeah. All right, we'll leave it there. Congratulations to the Phoenix Suns for knocking off the starless Los Angeles Clippers. And we will be back next week. And hopefully, by the time we reconvene next week, the Cavs will be preparing for a series against the Miami Heat. And getting ready to hopefully advance the Eastern Conference Finals. Knock on wood. We shall see. So Thanks for listening tonight. Really appreciate it. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies. And most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.